Blog Talk Radio.
Elohim, Yellow Rhythmic Seed. I haven't said that in a while, and the time is now. We are so glad that you're here. The entrance music was Rakia Traore Sobali out of Mali. So stay tuned, and we're going to have more of Rakia Traore's music throughout the program today, especially at the end. I'm so excited about tonight's program. It's actually a continuation of the program that we did on Wednesday when we started to speak about superbugs. So we're going to continue that. We defined it a lot on the program, etc. And we promise to bring you solutions for this program when we bring in our co-host, Dr. Jatta, in just a few minutes. For our hot topic today, we're going to launch into a very controversial topic, and that's HIV. Next program is going to be about HIV 35 years later, and we're going to look at, well, where are we globally with HIV? And to kind of open up that topic, we came across a clip that talks controversially about the existence of HIV. So we're going to look at both sides of that on our next program, whether it does, whether it whether it does exist, whether it doesn't, which many would say that's absolutely ridiculous. But we're going to look at both sides, and we can make our own decisions based on the information that is being presented on the program. So let's start with that clip about HIV before we bring in Dr. Jatta and our topic for today, which is Superbugs Part 2.
I'm talking today to the Austrian-German biologist Crystal Meyer, who has proven that the HIV virus does not exist. Crystal, could you tell us something about your qualifications, please?
I studied at the University of Marburg in Germany, and I studied chemistry, biochemistry, biology, and I did my scientific work in medical microbiology concerning virus and antibodies.
And this research brought you to look at the HIV virus, and you discovered there is no such thing. Is that correct?
It was later that I did my research on AIDS and HIV, but with this background, it was very interesting for me to do research in this area.
And you found out that what looks like the HIV virus is actually a gene in our immune system.
Yes, I found out by doing research when I taught the students in Belize, Central America, in microbiology, that the genes of our immune system, which are called human leukocyte antigen genes, are the cause for testing positive, because they are very variable, and by gene expression we produce RNA and proteins, and these just make the test positive. But nothing is coming from outside, it's a production from inside, and it does not mean that we are sick or have a disease.
Another problem you point out is that the HIV tests are not standardized.
Yes, the tests are not standardized. They vary all over the world. So you can take a test in Africa and fly with your result to France. If you were tested positive in Africa, you are negative in France. And let's say you test positive in Germany, go with your result to Australia, there you would be named negative.
So the whole HIV testing system is totally capricious.
Yes, it is, because there is no standard. A virus has never been proved, and without a standard you cannot really establish a test system. And the tests vary all over the world, and they change from time to time.
So, Crystal, what is your view of the treatment for this non-existent virus? Does it actually harm people?
The medical treatment in the beginning was really hard, because it was a high doses of ACT, acetomidine, and this really disturbs DNA, and this was a problem for those who had to take the medication, because they died of the drugs. And now the drugs today, we have more drugs, but they are not as hard as before. But as there is no virus, we have to treat just the diseases people have, because there is no new disease. It's just old diseases with new name.
So you are saying the treatment could actually be more harmful than the disease?
You see, the normal thing for a medical doctor is to find out which disease a patient has, do the analyzing, and then treat. So if you have a wrong diagnosis, the treatment is also not the best.
You mentioned that certain flu vaccines had to be withdrawn from the market because the people who take these vaccines could test positive for HIV.
Yes, there was recently a flu vaccine that was retracted from the market. They did not say they retracted it because of the positive testing after the vaccine, although it is in the leaflet. but they said because of small side effects.
So it's actually in the leaflet that if you take this vaccine, you can test positive?
Yes, it's in the leaflet.
So that means somebody who takes a flu vaccine could be falsely diagnosed with HIV and given these harmful drugs?
Yes, it's like this. And also, you see, people are trying to find a vaccine against HIV. And if you give a shot against HIV, you will test positive. That's normal, because after a vaccination, you test positive for the antibodies.
So the vaccine is giving people, really, the HIV?
If they will do it, and there are tests, then people test positive. That's why they do research to find out which positive test comes from a vaccine and which positive test does not come from a vaccine, but this absolutely makes no sense.
Why do so many people in Africa test positive for the HIV virus?
Africa is just a special genetic factor because people have different genes. That does not mean they have disease genes, they just test more often positive because of their background.
So in basically the HIV test is testing for a certain genetic factor?
Yes, it is testing for gene expression factors.
It's testing actually then for a genetic factor which is very common in Africa?
Yes, it's testing for this. And it's more common in Africa than in other parts of the world.
And African people then receive this very harmful treatment?
Yes, if healthy people receive the harmful treatment, this really is a genocide.
Can you tell me a little bit about pregnant women?
Yes, pregnant women produce more antibodies instead of attacking the strange cells because the fetus in their body has 50% genes of the father. That's why they have to shift the immune system to produce more antibodies, because this protects the fetus from attack.
What about diseases like malaria or tuberculosis?
You see, some of the people in Africa suffer from these diseases and also from a lack of pure drinking water, and that is why they are sick. But the diseases have to be diagnosed correctly and treated correctly.
Are they often misdiagnosed as HIV?
There is often a misdiagnosis as HIV, and also medical doctors say if they say people have HIV, they receive more money and more funding as if they claim them to have tuberculosis or malaria.
Why do you think so many homosexuals are diagnosed with HIV?
Homosexuals might have an overload of proteins which make them positive in the test, and also in former times, I don't know if now, homosexuals took some drugs to have better feeling, and they were just they just had problems with drugs, and this also turned the test positive.
So there is no correlation between homosexuality and HIV?
There is no correlation between homosexuality and the virus. There might be some allergy against the proteins from the partner, but this is like a normal allergy and not a disease, but this could just render the test positive.
So it sounds to me, Crystal, as though this is a kind of genocide against people in Africa, against women who are producing the next generation of children, and against homosexuals. Would you agree with this?
I agree that this is a genocide.
If people want more information on this, Crystal, where can they get it?
They can look at my website, which you will...
Okay, so... That's a really interesting topic. We're going to explore that more. That was the controversial side of it. That chemist or biologist is disputing or refuting the existence of the HIV virus. And in the mainstream community, that would be considered just absolute insanity. So, but, you know, we'll take a look at it and draw our own conclusions. So we're almost to the time of opening up the line for our co-host, Dr. Jata Rahim. But in the meantime, I had wanted to start to launch into the topic of what are superbugs. What is a superbug? I think we talked a little bit about that last week. What's a superbug? So we're going to review that because it's really short. And then we really want to talk about how they're affecting us personally. And we have a wonderful example of that, wonderful but sad. So, again, let's quickly review. What is a superbug?
There is a constant arms race going on between doctors and the bacteria they're trying to kill. A superbug is one that's got extra defenses, extra abilities to ignore the impact of antibiotics. The warning here is simple. The very last line of defense, the last drug doctors use when all other antibiotics has failed, no longer works because bacteria have become resistant to it. At the moment, some antibiotics can already be used to treat this infection. The concern is that it goes global, combines with other types of antibiotic resistance to create truly untreatable infections. In that circumstance, you'll have infections that can no longer be treated, but also cancer therapies and things like surgery will no longer be effective.
Okay, so that was short and to the point, and we actually had played that on the previous program. But it kind of gives you an idea of where we are with the superbug phenomenon. And there are many forms of superbugs. What it is various bacteria or viruses, as was just stated, that basically become resistant to the treatment that had been experienced before or successful before with that particular virus or bacteria. And last week we kind of reviewed how that could happen in terms of the courses of medication. We also reviewed how they mutate. So we had an example of an experiment that was done, and that's on NPR's site. We had placed that into the chat. The link for that, if you go to npr.com and go to their search engine and just search for that superbug video, you'll probably be able to locate it there. So we encourage you to do that, and we're going to now talk about, sadly, what happened with our brother Muhammad Ali. Because when Muhammad Ali passed, there was quite a bit of conversation about, of course, he had Parkinson's. We saw that. And so there was a somewhat of an assumption that that's actually what had killed him. But actually what has turned out to be is that the greatest, Muhammad Ali, passed away from septicemia, also known as sepsis. Sepsis is a form of superbug. It is basically the entire system. It starts with a minor infection, and it becomes virulent to the point where it can cause death. Hear from a medical professional why sepsis is a current emergency.
Sepsis is the body's overwhelming response to an infection. That infection could be a virus, a bacteria, even a fungus. Any source of infection can lead to sepsis. And different people respond to infections in different ways. Two people will get the exact same infection. One person may be down for 3 days, feel a little punky, get better on their own, and go back to work. And another person with the exact same infection ends up in the intensive care unit in multi-organ failure and shock with a long hospital stay. So what are some aspects of earlier intervention that will help improve the outcomes in sepsis and help decrease hospital stay and save lives? First and foremost is diagnosis, okay? And getting somebody to either medical care or calling their doctor and having that suspicion that, you know what, something isn't right, okay, without letting it linger on for hours or days, sometimes weeks without a diagnosis. Once you've diagnosed someone with sepsis, we do a number of tests. We measure the amount of acid in their blood. We measure different metabolites in their blood. We look for sources of infection in your lung and in your urine. And then when we've done that evaluation, we will generally give you fluid, most often through an IV, but you certainly can do it by mouth. So, you know, make sure that when you are suspicious that someone is sick, make sure you control their fever, and at home the things you can do while you're, you know, getting them prepared to, you know, to go to the doctor is make sure they drink a lot of fluids, make sure you control their fever. The other important issue is getting antibiotics. So once we've identified a source of infection, the best evidence shows that appropriate and early antibiotics definitely save lives and definitely improve outcomes in patients. And additionally, I think we're better at identifying it. So patients that, you know, may have died in the hospital of a mild urinary tract infection, or they had kidney failure 20 years ago, we're actually going to be able to diagnose them today and recognize, you know what, that's sepsis, that's severe sepsis, and, you know, this is something we need to treat aggressively, and we would identify and diagnose that patient differently today than we did 20 years ago. Between 8 and 900,000 people develop severe sepsis every year in the United States, and about 250 to 300,000 people die, okay? That's an extraordinarily high case fatality rate. We spend upwards of $16 billion as a country treating severe sepsis and septic shock at every stage. Sepsis kills more people than HIV, breast cancer, and heart disease combined. The easiest way to avoid it is to be very conscious of the fact that everyone is a potential victim. Okay, you can't be healthy enough or young enough or strong enough. Everyone is susceptible. So when you see warning signs in yourself or a family member or a friend where, gosh, I know they had a cold, or, you know, they had a fever the other day and now they're not acting well, or, you know, one of those red flags pops up, be really cognizant and be an appropriate advocate for yourself or your family member. And to go to them and say, listen, maybe we should get this evaluated, go to an urgent care, go to your primary care doctor, if you have to go to the emergency department, but there are options 24/7 where you can get evaluated. And don't let that linger on until irreparable damage is done.
So I think that was quite well said. That describes what sepsis is. On our show page for this this program, blogtalkradio.com/dimensional-healing, you'll see examples of superbugs, MRSA, etc. And we talked a lot about that last week. And what I want to do for just about 2 minutes is review that whole concept of the superbugs arising in the meat. So I'm going to just review this for about 2 minutes, and then we're going to bring in our co-host, Dr. Jata, so we can start to talk about a little bit more about solutions through his expertise. So let's review this quickly and get your pen, paper, and whatever, however you record information out, so that you can take notes on how to build your immunity from superbugs. Let's look at this first, though.
A British inner-city hospital. A deadly bacteria has been found in the umbilical cords of newborn babies. It's a superbug found in livestock, particularly pigs, and now it's infecting people.
The doctor was a little bit scared when I say I work in pig farm.
It can be caught by touching contaminated animals, people, or even meat. In an 18-month investigation, The Guardian has gone on the trail of where this new superbug is coming from. We've obtained undercover footage of British pig farms and exposed the conditions where bugs could be breeding. We've conducted independent tests to see whether our supermarkets are selling contaminated meat. Well, these results are pretty shocking, and we reveal how the superbug is already raging in the country supplying much of our pork.
It's an epidemic out of control.
A catastrophe, because we don't even have the most basic knowledge of how widespread MRSA is.
This is the story of LA-MRSA CC398, the animal superbug, and why Britain could be on the brink of an epidemic. A Glasgow hospital. A strain of MRSA linked to livestock has been found in the umbilical cords of two newborn babies. This is not the hospital MRSA with which we're all familiar, but animal MRSA, the latest disturbing twist in the war we're losing against the superbug. Scientists who discovered it have no idea how it got there. All they know is that the bacteria has jumped species and is passed from animals to humans, and that in humans, LA-MRSA CC398 is resistant to many antibiotics modern medicine can throw at it. Commonly manifested in the skin, this strain of the animal superbug rarely kills people, but for some, the bug can cause serious and life-threatening infections, including pneumonia and blood poisoning. Its main victims are those who work with pigs.
I was filled up with many red spots with some liquid inside. Almost every single hair was infected.
Highly contagious, the superbug can be caught by touching contaminated animals or people.
You have contact with people, you shake hands with people. People carry the organism in their nostrils, in their throat, on their hands. The problem with MRSA is actually that the transmission takes place in the community.
And that's quite alarming, you know, not fear promoting, but alarming and something to be really aware of. These things are more and more prevalent. Everything is more and more prevalent, as a matter of fact, because when we look at HIV next week, you know, we're going to look at the evolution of that. Everything is more prevalent, and why, you know, we want to look at why that is as well. I have opened up the line for my co-host, Dr. Jata Rahim. Greetings, Dr. Jata. How are you this evening?
Greetings and salutations. I couldn't be better. The hurricane missed us here, but my prayers go out to the people in Haiti, especially Port St. Louis. We're very blessed here.
Yes, there was a near miss on South Florida, Broward and Dade counties. Palm Beach got a little bit more of a hit, but not anything near what Haiti and Cuba experience. So again, we are eternally and externally giving thanks for that. But my heart goes out to all of those whose family members, loved ones are now suffering yet another blow. So also in Santo Domingo as well. So, Dr. Jata, we started last week speaking about the superbugs. And in the process of doing that research for the program, I discovered a really surprising piece of information that I wasn't aware of. We have the utmost respect for the greatest Muhammad Ali and all his contributions. And so I was so surprised to find out that while we are looking at the topic of superbugs, that he actually passed away from sepsis, a system-wide infection that his body could not defeat. It's distressing. It brings it to a very personal level, you know, for lots of us. And I wanted to get your take on what is it with these superbugs now? Why such an arising of, you know, these pathologies that weren't prevalent 10 years ago? Why is that happening?
Two things come to mind. The first thing is Muhammad Ali. I have an autograph picture here of Muhammad Ali and his wife, Khalila Ali. I'm looking at it right now. She frequents the People's Clinic here in Florida. So it's a very, very personal thing. Right in my living room, I see it every day. And plus, you know, their contribution to human rights. So it is a very personal thing, as you mentioned before. two things come to mind as to why this is such a prevalent situation for us today. And I'm sure there are many, many more reasons. But I think that our hygiene is could be a lot better. Personal hygiene, environmental hygiene, that's quite a big topic. The physicians before were called hygienists because, you know, they stressed to be clean and cleanliness is next to godliness. That could even be the mantra in business or in industries or businesses, hospitals, for instance. I know they try. So I think the other thing that comes to mind is the overproduction of antibiotics in some way. The body's immunity now. Antibiotics was the cornerstone of allopathic medicine. Without that, there could have been hardly any surgeries done before, and it really was a leg for us, saved many lives. But everything, the night and the day has a balance. Diurnally, daylight hours throughout the year, we have to always be critical of the balance in life, and I'm hearing myself speak. Whenever we tend to overdo things and we really don't consider the repercussions, it always comes out. It's said that where there are many chicken, the hawk is always near. So we have to be more conscious of ourselves and of others, in my opinion. So two things, I would summarize it like this. Our environment and the food we eat.
So what I'm hearing you say, not wanting to paraphrase, you're saying the environment and the food that we eat. And so what is it about those two factors that is so different than even 10 to 15 years ago? I don't think we have touched on Morgellons on this program. I can't remember. Perhaps we did, but I know we did in previous programs in the dimensions of quantum and dimensional healing incarnation of this program. We did a lot about Morgellons. So I'm looking at now Morgellons specifically, even though that was not a planned topic, but specifically that, Morgellons, and all of these various pathologies, the MRSA, the LA MRSA, et cetera. You're saying that there's something different in our environment that's causing the rising of these particular factors that was not present, say, 10, 20 years ago. Perhaps.
Yes. There are many things. The air we breathe with the chemtrails, the fact that every male in this Western Hemisphere has some nuclear material in his gonads from Chernobyl years ago, and the breast tissue in women also contains that. So our natural environment, and this is in the 70s, much less what's taking place now. Although we have good FDA regulations in some way for pollutions and pollutants, we still have a long, long way to go for our natural environment that we live in. So that's one thing and that would also lead to the diminishing of the human immune system if the external environment is not correct. Tantamount with that, now you could then, if the external environment is not correct, the soil is going to be not correct and so forth. And you know, we live within the bubble of everything. Now, don't get me wrong. Now, I'm not saying that alternative medicine and things of this nature can stop these things. We try to deal with the actual cart. You know, we try to be the horse is going to pull us. So we're trying to be preventative in the things that we do. So my suggestion is that we, to be the best we can be, we can tighten up on a few things, and that may bring about even a different consciousness that would make us more aware of things around us that we could change.
That really brings to mind, it just popped in, an experience that I had a couple of days ago. Everyone was out getting their supplies for the impending hurricane, and I was in a local store, and there was a woman who had filled her cart with Trix and multicolored food dye cereal with loaded with sugar. I mean, it's like she had bought five huge bags, not boxes, but those big bags that are the, you know, the. So a gentleman walked by, and he said, "Are you going to actually eat that crap?" It was like, he said, "I bet you're diabetic, aren't you?" And she said, she shook her head, yes. He said, "I'm diabetic too, and I know what I'm talking about. You see that crap you're buying? It's going to make you sick. It's full of sugar and it's full of dyes. You need to put it back."
What a wonderful Samaritan he was.
And I don't know, that just kind of came to mind. I'm like, that's a real example. Number one, of love, because he could have just kept walking by and say, "Boy, look at all that stuff she's buying," and kept it to himself. But he was willing to actually go out on a limb in today's world and question her on the things that she was doing that was detrimental based on his personal experience. And so, you know, that's a little bit of an aside, but it really is still the same topic, because we were also talking about the food. So the food diminishes our immune system. There have been numerous opportunities for that to have been documented. I mean, you can even look on the archives of this program, scroll back over the years that this program has been broadcasting, and look at some of the information that we have brought to the forefront about that. But you can also, in the age of Google, go into your device and look at the connection between immunity and certain foods that it has been shown that the consumption of foods that have no real nutritive value deplete the immune system, deplete the body on all levels. So that has us looking at the opposite of that, or the converse of that way of thinking, and that is the foods and substances that do nourish. And that's why we have Dr. Jatha. So where are we going to start with in terms of how do we nourish to build up the immune system from some of these things that are out here?
Again, we could begin with our personal hygiene, you know, how we take care of our skin, dry washing the skin abrasively, our breath and movement exercises we do to build up the protective chi, as we call it, give our body a resistance to things that may want to penetrate from the outside. Cleaning our food, for instance, that we buy in solutions that may be more easy on the liver. A lot of things we're told to clean the food with, we have no visual activity to show us that the substance we're using to clean is actually cleaning, so we have no idea. I have used food-grade peroxide, 33% food grade, which means that you can ingest it. And it has a very unique ability of oxidizing pathogens on food. And you can actually see bubbles arise from the actual washing. which shows you that, you know, whatever toxins or fungal or activities is in the food, you'll actually see that. And you will continue that until you don't see that anymore. You'd wash it off, add more, and it would diminish and diminish and diminish. Certain nuts you put it in, my God, it bubbles for half an hour, certain nuts.
Wow.
So I would recommend basic things like that, basic hygiene things that we may take for granted, cleaning the food, preparing the food, keeping the refrigerator clean and up to date, little basic things. Again, these may not stop us from getting the superbug, but maybe we would be one of the ones that may recover a little easier because we may have more resilience within that, you know, the human immune system. We have to align ourselves also with, and in passing, to try to remove toxins from us, especially things we put on topically. You know, lipstick was one of the greatest nuclear experiment there was in the world. No one knew what was in lipstick. But, you know, women would put it on, and that would also end up in the lip tissue, soft tissue, the breast tissue. You know, many things that a woman could use on her lips to, number one, to nourish the lips, keep it moist and keep it vibrant. That would be much better than what Max Factor sell or somebody else. Again, getting back to the lady in the store you saw, we do have freedom of choice here, and the choices that was there for her, sometimes I wonder, is really, we should give people better choices than that, than the sugary products.
Yes.
You know, so, but anyway, I don't want to digress too much on that. Getting back to it, we could build the first line of defense in the body by the probiotic or the enzymatic action. A body that has good probiotic or enzymes or ferments, as they're all called, they're all interchangeable words, the body would have more T cells, more ability to be vibrant, to produce what we call the chi, the body's radiantness that would resonate and prevent things from coming in. And even if things are in the body, these things help to create the body's own homeostasis, which means that if the body is at the pH that the body should be, nefarious things couldn't arise because they're like a different environment. It's just like your house. If it's clean and kept well, you're not going to see the roaches running around as much. You're not going to see the air is going to be cleaner. So just by maintaining that probiotic, enzymatic, ferment of the food intake in the body gives us a good immunity that may help us rebound quicker. One more thing I want to stress is that the grasses, and if we think of grasses, how the Supreme Creator is just so magnificent in decorating the carpet of the earth with grasses, that alone is a meditation to ponder on for a while. Because the grasses are so unique that the root system of the grasses would connect with each other, that if one is at the other end of the acre, it would transfer maybe a missing element that the other grass at the other end of the acre doesn't have through the network of system of the roots. Grasses are fundamental for the body, for the health of the body, the wellness of the body. It seems as if it's really our carpet that we lay on is also our insurance policy within. So any grass, barley grass, wheat grass, spelt grass, kamut grass, all of these things, we should be consuming these things generously every day, and bringing the youths up to somehow get acquainted with that type of taste. Now, you may have to mix the grasses with some aromatic herbs that would make the taste a little better. We have a lot of lemongrass here at the People's Clinic that we use from our garden with the wheatgrass. And we also use moringa leaf in the juicing. And if you don't know about moringa's quality, we could all look that up. But the grasses are very, very, very important, and consume it in generous amounts. Generous amounts regularly will change your life. Plus the seaweeds and things like this will give us good immunity. Now, these are the things that we stress in our food preparation class, our living foods class we give here. These are basic things that if we build on the basics, we will be stronger. So food combining is also important. Anti-inflammatory herbs and spices are good. And another very, very important thing are the adaptogen herbs. The adaptogen herbs are special plants that the creators blessed us with that give us the ability to adapt easier from stress. For instance, the seasons are changing now. We're going into the yang energy, the sun energy is declining, and we're going into the cooler energy. The fire is dissipating, and the coolness is appearing. So these are changes we go through in life physiologically, and it also brings about emotional changes that we have to adapt to. Even in the hurricane situation that missed us here, there's a lot of lots of adjustments we had to make. So adaptogen herbs are, again, it seems as if we have everything in life, because we have the herbs and we have the things to help us to adapt. How wonderful is that? So things of that nature is very good. These herbs and these plants strengthen the adrenal system, which strengthens the hormonal systems, which are the signaling, the little signals that will go from the brain to the other parts of the body to bring about the balance. So these things will help us in the world we live in today. Again, they're not going to be the A1A of all things, but again, any good team builds on basics, and these are some of the basics.
And you want to check out the Living Foods preparation and certification class, because you can get beyond the basics. We're giving you the roots and shoots here to let you know that we got some really good content of things that can be used to bring about a life of radiant longevity. I was having a brief conversation with Dr. Jatta earlier this very day about the shift that we see in people moving away from really wanting to prepare, well, long time now, moving away from really wanting to prepare their own healing modalities. And we have now the habit of just going to buy things. But there's a subtlety. There's something called the epigenome, or you could call it the microclimate or the microenvironment, that's really unique to you. Your biome, you know, which is your internal flora, as well as what is in your immediate environment. And it has been shown that preparing substances in your immediate environment, within the microclimate, within even the atmospheric pressure and the level of light and the level of oxygen in the air in your particular environment where you are, brings a greater healing component than getting something somewhere and having it transported. Yes, those things are effective. That has been shown to be the case. But more dynamic, more effective, less time in the healing mode, more radiance, more strength comes from having the knowledge to do fundamental and basic healing of your, you know, of your own life and that of your loved ones. And so that takes us into a little bit of an aside, and then we're going to come back to finish this topic. In the process of having the Living Foods class and having the clients come through and raising our consciousness about the things that we need, and we know that these things have a cost, We have come up with the concept, which is not really us coming up with it, and definitely not a new concept, of collectively pooling our resources to purchase what it is that we need. So that has all kind of names and all kind of cultures, you know, and all kind of societies. So we're going to call it, right, for lack of a better word, and we can always change the name, we're open to great suggestions, is a purchasing collective. And what that means is that we pool our resources to buy something that we all agree that we need for less than we could pay, could buy it as an individual. So, for example, Dr. Johnson was just speaking of the food-grade hydrogen peroxide. That's a substance that we use every day. We use that literally, not just one time a day. Do we eat? Yes, we eat. So pretty much everything that we eat, living things, we place it in food-grade peroxide in water, and a solution of food-grade peroxide in water, and you really get to see the things that rise up off of the so-called cleanest food. So we know that it is an essential ingredient of just day-to-day life. So if you go to your typical store, like, you know, your typical grocery store, you can't find it. Okay. So if you go to some of the more specialty health-oriented stores, you can find it, but the price is very high, the retail. So one of the first objects or products that we research is the food-grade hydrogen peroxide. And we found a place that we can purchase it at roughly $20 less per gallon by buying it collectively. So these are the kind of savings that we can bring about, which is like saving $20 is like putting $20 in your pocket. That $20 can go to your savings, or it can go towards something else that you would not have had it if you had just stuck on the individual buying platform. So we pool our resources. There's pretty much everything that we need we can collectively purchase. And so that's what we're putting forth. You're going to hear more about it. We have a website up for it now. It's the Ujamaa Purchasing Collective .webs.com. So it's a free website. So we start off with using the tools that we have, and then we can build it. So you can go there. That's Ujamaa, UJAMAA, purchasingcollective.webs.com. You can see who we are. You can see how to join. You can see the initial purchases that we're doing in October and November, but we're looking for more purchases for November. We also have to add lots more information to that website. So continue checking back, and you'll see changes and improvements as we move the buying club forward. So I wanted to share that information. You can always go to our site as well. There's information on our site, the People's Clinic for TOM.com, that will provide information about the buying club as well as some of our other initiatives and products. Also, our show page, if you're on our email list, you get in your email inbox, just easy, breezy, right into your email inbox, a link to come into this program, a link to join the buying club, a link to join the Liver Cleanse, a link to register for the Living Foods Preparation class. So we make it very easy for you if you become a member of our e-list. And everything comes in one package, and you can just scroll and tap where you have areas of interest. So, Dr. Jatta, we're winding down the program, and I want to make sure that we covered everything that we wanted to share about building our immunity against superbugs. So I know that the skin is, some say, the largest organ of respiration, the largest organ of elimination. The whole perspiration effect is part of the elimination. You had spoken earlier about and the lips, which of course have our skin as well. Things that nourish the skin. Can you give us some examples of what to put on our skin versus the things that we wouldn't want to eat? Because if we can't eat it, I would imagine we wouldn't want to put it on our skin or our hair. But what are some examples of things that we can use on our skin and in our hair?
Dr. Bonner has some good products. Natural soaps that's made without any type of additives. Before that, though, we would want to dry wash the skin, which is using like a louver to wash the skin or brush the skin, dry brushing the entire skin with a louver to stimulate the pores. And then, you know, bathe with soaps that's not toxic. Many of them around. Some soaps are antifungal in their nature. Many of them exist. But basically, things like coconut oil, it depends on where you are. If you're in the winter time somewhere, you may need a heavier oil or something that would give you more protection from the elements. Shea butter, things of that nature is good. My mind is drawing a blank now on the other things. Grapeseed oil is a very good oil to use, but make sure you don't get the grapeseed with canola oil in it. It may be a little cheaper with that. Sometimes they trick you. Grapeseed is a very thin oil. The viscosity of it is so thin that if you put it on, it would just really go into the pores and nourish the skin. Plus the antioxidant value of grapeseed is huge. The flavonoid value of that is huge. Many more. Jojoba oil keeps you moist. There's a plethora of things that I can't really bring to mind right now. The greatest thing also is to produce heat in the body, i.e. from taking some type of sauna to perspire or aerobic activity to release and open the pores, yoga, tai chi, qigong, all these are good things for the skin. And these things are things that we have to do ourselves to put the lotion on and the skincare on. We have to do that also, but that's quite passive. If we get involved and we're a little bit more vigorous and we do the activities, then whatever we put on the skin will be more well received.
So everything that you named is something that is basically edible. We might not want to eat it in large amounts, or like jojoba oil or, you know, the different oils, but it is something that is edible and the body's able to digest it and secrete the part or absorb the part that it needs. So
yeah, and don't forget, beauty comes from within. You know, to treat the skin properly, we have to be doing it from within.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to be masking the problem and thinking that whatever we put on looks like it has a good sheen and a good luster. We're fooling ourselves. We do need things on the skin, don't get me wrong, but the best food for the skin is from good nutrition, good blood absorption, and things of this nature, good detoxing, to be hydrated. These things will give us good skin.
Yes, and, you know, all of these are, they seem unimportant, but this is how the body works and how the immune system works. So nourishing the skin makes us more resistant to some of the things that you see on the show page there, if you're online with this program. Having a good basic immunity, a good diet, a good live it, really, you know, that brings in the nutrition. We can't emphasize it enough. It may seem redundant, but we're here to repeat. We know that, you know, we get bombarded with all kinds of messages that take us off our path of loving ourselves and having lives of radiant longevity. So we're here to repeat the message over and over and over again that we have to love ourselves and also provide tools, means, methodologies, the technologies, the techniques to be able to take into your own hands your well-being and that of your family. Listen to what other people have said. Listen to the experiences of the people that we share during our clips, and we're actually going to start now moving to having guests on our program. You'll be seeing that come up in the next few programs. So we want you to be able to tap into this because we love you. We're all connected and we're all each other. So that's my heartfelt message. So, Dr. Jata, what's yours? And then we'll sign off with Rakia Traore.
Give thanks for the sunrise. Make enthusiasm your horse throughout the day in your work. And be grateful.
I mean, when you see that sunrise, you know, it's just that awesome feeling of intense gratitude. Another day is here. We're going to sign out with Rakia Traore, and it is Mbifo, Malian songstress. Check out our show page to get the fullness of this program. This is Yahya Luhim signing out. Love you to life, and see you on Wednesday when we have another program in store. Peace.
Meri juguni o bevan.